This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening on this Showdown Saturday and Mother's Day weekend. Of course, it's tomorrow. Sophie Thompson, good morning to you.
Good morning, Deb. Great day to be out in the garden or going out to appreciate gardens, you know, whether they're the botanic gardens, the Waite Arboretum, you know, going for a drive in the hills to look at the autumn colour. Lots of garden-related adventures.
I couldn't agree more. Perfect weekend for that. And look, we're going to talk about plants that are very important to our gardens, to our habitat and our biodiversity in just a moment with Jeff Reed. Now, you've filmed a segment for Gardening Australia with Jeff, and what he doesn't know about natives ain't worth knowing.
And in particular, propagating natives, which is his passion. So, you know, I should start by saying the Australian Plant Society is an extraordinary group, and the South Australian region has lots of different subgroups. So, you know, local groups like on York Peninsula or all over the place. And so Jeff is involved with a particularly interesting group called COOTS. Now, funny acronym, but it means conservation of our threatened species. So, and they do an incredible job. So good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. How are you today?
Fantastic, thank you.
Best weather. Marvellous weather, isn't it?
It's a given that we all want rain. However, if we haven't got rain, let's at least have beautiful days to be out there working in our gardens and planning on adding more plants to our garden, but in particular adding more native plants to our garden. Now, Jeff, in a little capsule, why should we be adding native plants to our garden?
Well, the bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, is that they have always grown here and they are the plants that really thrive in our environment. And, if we can find plants that actually belong in certain areas that always were there, why not put them back? So that's always my bottom line.
Because, you know, Australian natives, bear in mind, Australia is a huge place, you know, from the tropics and the subtropics and the, you know, cool temperates. We're a huge place. So ideally, in South Australia, we should be growing natives from a comparable climate, so another summer dry climate. But I'm particularly passionate about the concept of people adding at least an area of locally indigenous plants, which means plants from their local area. And if someone's listening right now and thinks, well, my garden's already planted, where could I put them? I'm keen on people basically taking over the front, what we used to call the nature strip, and bringing it back for nature by using local indigenous plants. And that will bring in the birds, the bees and the butterflies.
That certainly is. And there's a lot of people that are really thinking about that these days. So probably years ago, the idea of putting stuff out on the front probably wasn't a good idea. The councils used to come along and spray and do things like that. But now I think the councils are starting to wake up that people have a responsibility to make their places look good. And I will encourage that as much as possible. And, when you look out and our front verges, they can be quite bare and they look horrible. So it's nice to put something in, especially if it's going to flower. You know, things that are going to bring in your bees and butterflies and a talking point as well. So to me, that's common sense to do that.
And a lot of them are looking like dust bowls at the moment, Jeff. So it's always good to plant out, and that gives you an excuse to go out and have a water.
Yeah.
And like you said, have a chat with people in your neighbourhood about what plant works well in your area.
It's surprising, actually, just how many people actually stop and talk and actually have a bit of a chat. So I'm not really that good at it at my place because I guess in that area we've got a lot of new buildings and have just gone up and the people there still haven't really got around to that concept of doing that. But in some of the older areas I'm noticing it happening more and more and more. So, you know, to me, It's coming around. There's a lot of people really getting stuck into it.
Well, if you've got a question about what you might plant on your verge to get those conversations going in your neighbourhood, or if you've got any questions about native plants, call in now. The phone line is 1300 222 891. Got plenty of lines free. You get a 2-for-1 here with Sophie and Jeff Reed, President of the Conservation of Our Threatened Species Group of the Australian Plant Society, in the studio right now. Now, I would like to know a little bit about the Conservation of Our Threatened Species part of the Australian Plant Society, because you're taking it a step further and looking at the critters in our gardens.
Pretty much, yes. How much time you got? No. We've been involved in I've been involved in conservation for over 30 years, so it's been a long, long time. The Australian Plant Society has been a group, I guess, that has always been sort of sitting in the background, and they'll have their meetings and talk about their plants and their gardens and such like. But I've sort of branched and gone out into conservation, and that's my passion, always has been. And it got to a point really where we were starting to struggle and we were running out of people, because the old story of these days is that everybody's getting older. They're getting, you know, older, and they can't get down on their hands and knees and pull out weeds and put in plants and stuff. So what I've done is actually gone out, and this is why I showed you that thing about propagation workshops. And I've been doing that for 12 months now. And what it's done is brought in lots and lots of new people, and they're all young. And if you've got young people, that's our future right there in front of us. And so now our Coots group has been enlarged, I might say, by many, many people. But our projects is the big thing about our, you know, like our group, and the fact that we've got four major projects around South Australia. And Sophie knows all about one of them in particular over at Pine Point on York Peninsula. And that has now grown exponentially. So it's now a massive, great project that has taken in a mining site as well. So it's actually grown huge. So conservation, yes, it has been a passion of mine, as I said, for many, many years. But now I'm finding that because we've done so much damage to this state over the years, we now need to try and do our very best, or our utmost, to try and do something about it. And that's what we're really doing. And so the conservation group is a very special group, and I'm asking people out there who are interested in that to contact me, and they can. There's a number there, and I'll talk about that after, who want to get involved in this kind of work, because there's not too many people around that do it, but the ones that do it are very passionate about it, and we're the same.
Absolutely. And one of the things people don't understand, they might think, oh, well, you know, what does it matter if we lose one species? Every species is precious, and often those species could be the specific food plant for a butterfly, or, you know, that species might need to be pollinated by a native bee. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not only in regional areas, it's in our cities. We need to be looking after everything, and everyone can do their bit. Some might have time to, you know, get involved with your Coots team. Others might just want to start their own little verge. And the thing that excites me is when I meet people that have started planting their verge, and we should say, I should stop calling it a verge. Costa got us to call it a verge. We should go back to calling it a nature strip. But, you know, someone plants their own nature strip, you must get permission from your council, follow the guidelines. And then it inspires other people down the street. And, you know, then you find these streets where people have planted wildlife corridors. And at a time when the biggest threat to local creatures, you know, our wildlife, is a lack of habitat, when we create these wildlife corridors, it's really, really powerful. And for people, I'm going to mention that if people want to watch the story I filmed with you, Jeff, now it was nearly 10 years ago.
Is it really?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I was going to say 2 or 3 years ago, but
time flies, doesn't it?
Gee whiz!
So it's called A Passion for Propagation. So if you put in your search bar, Gardening Australia plus A Passion for Propagation, put in Jeff Reed and you'll get to watch this segment that Jeff and I filmed together. Now, one of the things is people are often a bit, you know, if they've never really thought about adding natives to their garden, they don't know where to start. And one of the best places to start is with expert advice from the Australian Plant Society. And next Saturday is the huge sale, isn't it, Jeff?
Certainly
and this is.
Is
the time to be planting. I should say autumn is the time to plant. Even if you haven't had rain, I'm starting to plant stuff out here, local stuff, because as long as I can make sure I can water it. So tell us about that sale.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's essential, is watering, especially now. It really needs it. So you've got to be very sure of doing that. The Australian Plant Society, it used to be, as you know, in the Wavell Showgrounds, but now we've moved to the Herbray Agricultural High School, and it's on next Saturday, the 17th of May, and it starts at, 9:30 in the morning and goes through to 1:30, and we have a whole range of people coming along to that, and as you say, they're all experts. There are people that are involved in the growing of the plants that are there for sale. Now, if people remember the Wavell Showgrounds, we used to have what I used to consider a wonderful idea. We don't do it any longer, but we should, and that is having our plants set out from A to Z, and people could walk in, read the little labels on the front, and get an idea all about the plants that are there. Now we have them displayed very similarly, but in groups now. So various growers will have their plants there with all the information about them ready to hand out to people that want to get it. So that is what is on next Saturday, and I urge anybody that wants to come along to this to get those plants. Now, if I remember, back in the days of Wavell, people used to have a box under one arm, a list in the other, and at 10 o'clock in the morning, the first thing they did was race right to those plants. So
do your planning and get the expert advice from people like you who are right there. The phone line to speak to Jeff and Sophie is 1-300-222-891. I've got a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away a little bit later as well, so keep that in mind. Emily from Strathalbyn is on the phone looking for some recommendations. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning, Deb. How are you?
Well, thanks.
And hi, Jeff and Sophie. I feel like, Sophie, I might become a bit of a permanent fixture calling in. I spoke to you a few weeks ago about we're building the house in the lavender paddock.
Oh, I remember, yes.
Yes, with the 40,000 lavender bushes, which most of them are now dead. So the problem is, we've got sort of a 2-acre kind of sort of house block, and we're going to put a grevillea moonlight hedge across the front of it. There's a lady just in Strath here who's got one. It's just beautiful, just to help with the dust. But we want to bring birds, and mainly birds, I suppose, but all sorts of things. And we want to do a predominantly native garden. And I was wondering I was looking for some recommendations of Jeff's top 5 shrubs that he would put in and around the house that do well in a really dry climate.
First of all, your grevilleas are a great idea. I think they're a wonderful plant. There's quite a range of those, and all different colours, so they would be really good. Then there's things like, and I do suggest you look at melaleucas and those types of plants like that as well, because there's such a range of those. I'm not sure about Banksias down that area, but things like the local Banksia would probably be quite good too. So Banksia marginata, which to me I think is one of those, even though they're not as pretty as the Western Australian ones, which is a bit sad in many ways, but those marginatas will bring the birds and butterflies and all the other insects as well. So they're really quite good. But another one that I would suggest is hakeas. So look at the hakeas, and there's so many ranges of hakeas and the colours, especially the one that is a South Australian species, which is Hakea franciscana, and it has brilliant red flowers, or red poker type flowers, and they really are an attraction for all the birds in the area. So think about those plants, but again, come back to what was indigenous to the area in many ways. So if you can do that, it would be good.
And Emily, one of the things to think about with birds is there's all sorts of different birds. So some are nectar feeders, some are seed eaters, some are insect eaters, so they come in for the insects that are on the plants. So as well as thinking, making sure you cover all of that rather than just the nectar feeders, also think about the different stories. So when we have just trees and lawn, we tend to get certain species of birds that we mightn't necessarily want dominate. But when you get the lower stories, you know, plants, you know, that are low down and say even prickly, if you've got the space, some of the acacias, then you'll get things like wrens nesting in the lower stories. And so you want all the different stories covered. And you know, as well as the Australian Plant Society, you know, there are amazing organisations out there. There's another one called Birds SA, and they're passionate about, you know, putting different stories in, making sure you've got it balanced. If you haven't got any trees, maybe even adding in some nesting boxes, because one of the things that's really important in nature is old trees with hollows. And hollows take 80 to 100 years to develop. And what's tended to happen in the past is people have chopped down dead trees. So there's no habitat for hollow-dependent species. So you're going to have a fantastic, exciting time, Emily, planting out and bringing the birds in. And obviously put water out for the birds.
Emily, we're glad that you're going to be joining us regularly on Tap That Gardening. Keep us up to speed with it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. The phone line is 1300 222 891 to speak to Jeff Reed, President of the Conservation of Our Threatened Species Group of the Australian Plant Society. We'll catch up with Paul and Doreen next. Love to hear from you as well. 1300 222 891.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Our special guest this morning is Jeff Reed from the Australian Plant Society. He's president of the Conservation of Our Threatened Species Group in that particular society. And Paul from Seppeltsfield is on the line. I was there last weekend, Paul. What a gorgeous part of the world. You've got a question on Hardenbergia. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, look, it certainly is a beautiful part of the world. We planted a few years ago a whole heap of Hardenbergias, hoping they'd be all of a sort of climber or creeper variety on a couple of fences. excuse me, but unfortunately, a couple of them turned out to be shrubs, and now one that turned out to be a creeper has died. I just wondered if there's another alternative we could look at for planting on some fence lines as a bit of a flowering creeper.
One of them is, now I'm going to have a good think about this, what we call old man's beard is always
Clematis microphylla. Yeah.
So that is a good one, and it actually does, it has beautiful yellow flowers or creamy coloured flowers, which are very, very attractive when you look at them. But the big thing about them is, that, as it says, it's old man's beard. You can actually pull the seed off and wrap it around the front of your face, and it does look like a beard. So,
trick, Paul.
Yeah, but, you know, the kids love it. It's just one of those things that you can play around with. But that's just one of the species. But I'm a bit surprised about your Hardenbergias, because they should last reasonably well. They're not too, you know, they're fairly hardy, or I would have thought so. So is it lack of water or something that you've got a problem out there, or do you think there's something else that's being a problem?
No, I'm not really sure, because some have lasted and others haven't, and I didn't know whether they have a lifespan or not.
No, I've got them and they last for years and years. It's interesting you talk about the creeper and the bush, because I've come across that many times. We went to Port Lincoln one year, and I pulled some seed off of a a native Hardenbergia over there that was just growing in a fence line, and that is actually a creeper, and it does exactly that. And and I found that it was rather good mounting it inside a hedge. So I had a hedge of Westringia and put the Hardenbergia in amongst that, and it was rather pretty because it actually flowered at different times. So you can play around with a lot of natives, and natives can look really quite stunning. But it's sad about the fact that you're losing them. And I know there's a lot of people having trouble at the moment, including myself, of just lack of water and the rain. We need that rain. So
we do need that rain. Yeah. And sometimes if you've got beautiful big old trees like gums, they're going to take advantage of any moisture you've gotten and dry soil out further. Paul, if you can't get to the Australian Plant Society sale next Saturday, you've got the Barossa Bush Gardens nearby, and I'd go and have a chat to them because they're a great resource of local natives for you. They might have some other suggestions for climbers that would do well for you.
Great. Thanks for your help.
Thanks, Paul. Lovely to hear from you. Anne is in Inman Valley. Hi, Anne.
Good morning. My question is, have we got any natives that the kangaroos won't eat?
How about one answer, and that's no. Everything at the moment is kangaroo food. They just after anything they can get their hands on. I've got Banksias on my property in the hills, and they decimate them. They just come along and just wreck the plants completely. I have to put metal guards all the way around them to try and stop the kangaroos. So it is really, it's a bad time for kangaroos just as much as everyone else and the plants.
Right, okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
All the best for that.
Well, going back again, you know, if you could put something around them to keep the kangaroos from eating them, yes. But you've got to, it's some work involved in doing that.
Okay. So.
Can I say that I often talk about this, one of the best gardens I know on KI, or one of the most innovative gardens, is on a 100-acre, say, property, and they're trying to bring wildlife back, and so the wallaby pressure and the roo pressure is huge.
Yes.
And she decided to put a kangaroo fence around her garden. But instead of doing a square fence, she put a round fence because she had observed that when a roo comes up to a round fence, they just get diverted. They swing off left or they swing off right. But when they come up to a square fence, they get irritated and they want to jump it. And she's managed to keep kangaroos, you know, in a high population of kangaroos, as long as the gates are kept shut, she keeps them out of her garden. So that's something to think about if you've got an area of garden that you want to establish.
How clever is that? Now, we're coming up to the 9 o'clock news very shortly, but Lynn in Modbury joins us with a Grevillea question. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Yes, my question is, we have a Grevillea hedge that we planted probably 7 years ago. It's a good height, but we can't get any flowers on it. And not just this dry year, but in the last probably 3 to 4 years, there's really not been much flower. Just wondering how we can get flowers.
Good question. Probably my thoughts on that would be, when are you actually trimming it, and are you pruning it and doing maintenance on it?
It has been pruned because it grew quite rapidly. We haven't done massive pruning in the last few years. It's just been sort of keeping it neat more than anything.
I haven't got any answers on that one, really. What about you, Sophie? What do you think?
Well, I don't know. Do we know what sort of Grevillea it is?
I was trying to find the name. I got it up at the Barossa, their spring festival or something, up that way. And it's got a small reddish, dark pink reddish flower that it appears within, not on the outside. Foliage.
Sounds so like Windpara gem or something, doesn't
it? Yeah, it could be.
Yep.
So they usually do flower, so I'm not sure why that's not happening. And they do make a great hedge.
They flower at the moment. They're just starting to come out now. I've got them coming out now. So is there any buds there at all or nothing? Nothing on them?
No, there hasn't been anything. And we've also had a couple of years, not this year, where it's gone like yellowy green on look to it. Yep.
So that can sometimes be alkaline soil, you know, because not all grevilleas are suitable for South Australia's alkaline soils. Mm. What would you say for that, Jeff?
Probably some. I'd be thinking about something like iron chelates or something like that around the base and see if that'll soak in and might help it a little bit. But I don't know if it's going to bring out the flowering. It'll take the colour of that colour away, but... Yeah, it's a problem.
Good luck with that, Lynn. Yeah, thank you very much for your calls.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning. If you are listening, welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Lovely to have you aboard. Good morning, Sophie Thompson.
Good morning, Deb. Happy autumn. Hope you get a chance to get out and get some of those beautiful summer, well, sunshine rays into you.
Exactly. It does feel a bit like summer's never ending at the moment, that's for sure. We all want some rain, but in this good weather, it is great for gardening. If you've got a question, we've got a very special guest in the studio joining us this morning, and that is Jeff Reed. He's president of the Conservation of Our Threatened Species Group of the Australian Plant Society. So we've got a focus on natives this morning. If you've got a question, please call in now on 1300 222 891. If you have got a comment to make, we'd love that on the text line, which is 0467 922 891. And just to let you know, I've got a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away as well in this Talk Back Gardening this morning, if you haven't won anything from the ABC in the last month or so. But let's welcome Jeff Reed. He is here talking about natives. Now, Jeff, of course, you've got the big native plant sale coming up next weekend. So we're headlining that. It's on at the Erbray Agricultural High School next Saturday, the 17th of May, from 9:30 to 1:30. Thanks for coming to the studio.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. And I'd love to talk about it anyway. So we've had plant sales for years and years, and so it's always good to get people to come in through the door and come and see what Australian plants actually look like. You know, there's so many varieties that are out there, and really we do need to see our people that have always been, they've always followed us over the years, so keep following us, you know. we're going to be doing this for a long, long time at Erbray. So, and I got to thank Erbray, really, because they put this on. We have an area there that they really go out of their way to make sure that we have a really good show. And it should be a good show again, because we've got all of our normal people that come along to us that we normally have, like the Butterfly Conservation Group. We have the Native Orchid Society, which is coming along there. There's plenty of books and plants for sale in the farm shed that's there. Of course, we're going to be there, the Coots Group. And I'll tell anybody that wants to come along to come and talk to us, because we're a very special group and we like to encourage people to join us if they can.
Wonderful.
As I said before, we have our propagation workshops. Actually, I've got one today. So it's the first one of they come in 5-week blocks. So it's really, it's an interesting thing for a lot of young people that they go to TAFE and they go to all these different places to learn about horticulture, but this is getting their hands dirty.
So propagation workshops is Jeff Reed's specialty as well. But Jeff and Sophie are here. You've got 2-for-1 this morning. Call in on 1300 222 891, as Ken of Sturt has done. Now, Ken, you've got a bit of an issue with acacia seeds. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, all. Yes, for many years I've tried to grow a rare acacia zipophila. So I've managed to get some seed from it's a Western Australian
variety,
acacia.
Yep.
But very hard to germinate. I just cannot get the seeds to germinate.
So what have you done already? What is the trick that you've done to get them started?
I've tried, boiling water.
Yes.
I've tried smoke.
You're doing all the right things. So in actual fact, First of all, not boiling water. Have hot water if you're going to do it that way. But let's get some seed. And for my – I remember somebody many years ago who had some very rare seed, and they sat down over a little grinding wheel that they used for doing doing jewellery, and they actually sat there and just ground a little bit off the outside, what they call a tester. That's the black part on the outside. And she didn't go in very deeply, but just went in enough to allow the moisture to get into the embryo. So you can do that. To me, that would be probably the most sensible way if you've got them as rare plants, and then soak them in hot water. So give them 24, even 48 hours of hot water and just see if they swell. So once you've done that little grind, give that a try. You can do it with sandpaper as well. So, you know, really just to try and score that outside layer. Give it a try.
Yes. Very good.
Matter of fact, come along to our plant sale and I'll talk more about it if you wish.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, Ken.
No, give it a go because it sounds like it's a great challenge, and if you're anything like me, you're not going to get beaten by it, so just keep it up.
Thank you, Ken, for the call. Appreciate that. Kat is in Albert Park with a couple of native questions. Hi, Kat.
Hi. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm in Albert Park, so sort of reasonably close to the sea and pretty windy. I'm doing a nature strip planting of native plants, and the soil is, like everywhere, very dry, quite sandy, probably alkaline from the rest of the property. I was wondering if I should be digging in, like, some compost, some organic matter before I put my plants in?
I certainly would, yes. Dig it in. It's certainly good to break down your soil because it's probably full of all sorts of other stuff and it's hard. And so, if you can break it down, and yes, you're going to need to moisten it fairly well to do that. But Sophie, you'd agree with me there, wouldn't you, with lots of mulch and stuff and...
Well, I'm actually fascinated by the fact that you suggest, and I'm going to say that you're the expert, that you suggest you can put in organic matter because often people are wary of putting in organic matter. Mm. If the soil is natural, they say, well, these plants should be adapted to that. But so the thing would be to make sure that, you know, if it's properly aged compost of your own, that's not going to be too fresh. But and if you could let it age too before you plant, that would be fabulous to let it, you know, break down. And what about if they're local native species, ideally they will be adapted once established to your local native conditions.
Certainly will.
Yeah.
Okay. So how long would you leave it before planting?
Well, the most important thing is you've got to wet it thoroughly. So when you feel the area is wet, you know, if it's compost, let's say, well, I don't know. If Jeff thinks you could put compost in, I think that's fabulous because then you could get it done, wet it up and plant soon. Yep. So and just keep an eye on the plants, obviously, you know, as they establish and be prepared. New project is a rewilding project, and I'm going to plant lots of local native plants, but I'm actually going to be prepared to water them for the first couple of years because I'm in a even local natives in a really harsh spot might need a helping hand to get going. Otherwise, you're going to have a low success rate.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just a point when you're talking about that, you know, because when we are out in the bush at our projects, for argument's sake, they don't get water out there. So we do mulch around and do our best to put leaf litter and all that sort of thing around these plants as best we can to try and maintain that moisture level that's in the soil as it is. So if we can do that and help the plants in that regard. But, yes, Sophie, you've got to water it. So at least that first year we've got to make sure that these plants survive. So yes, you don't want to lose them once you put them
in. Good luck with that, Kat. Thank you very much for the call. Roger is in paradise. Don't we wish we all were? Hello, Roger.
Good morning, guys. I have about three Lomodras longifolias in a 2x2 metre garden bed with a camelusium, and this pH is about pH 8.
Yes, I.
I to keep the camelusium going, I spray it with the iron chelates, and it looks nice and green. But the Lamondra has been in the ground for about 11 years now, and I haven't maintained them at all. They've got a really big, about 1 metre plus diameter. But as the last year and a half, they're kind of, two of them are really dying back. Mm. They're kind of a bit yellow, so I just wonder whether the other spray from the iron chelates has done some damage to them, or...
I wouldn't have thought so.
Primarily on... sorry?
I wouldn't have thought so. I don't think that iron chelates is that bad, really, for other plants.
They're kind of yellow and gradually dying back, and they're primarily surviving on irrigation water only because it's a small garden bed. Mm. Should they come back, or what should I be doing to bring it? What I've done is I've actually changed all one back to ground level and to see what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I'd be interested in trying that, yes. I think that's a good idea, actually, is to do that and give it a chance to recover itself. So, you know, doing that. And that, you know, for dianellas and all sorts of things, that's not a bad idea to trim them back hard and just see what comes.
Should there be some sort of maintenance I should be doing? Because I haven't really touched them for about 11 years, and they're just so tough to prune back by hand.
Yeah, go on, Sophie.
So what happens with Lamandras and Dianellas, there's been a lot of plant breeding to produce these cultivars that councils use. So when you drive around the suburbs, you'll see everywhere these mass plantings of Dianella or Lamandra. And most of those are designed to only get a haircut, say once every 5 years. And then the councils often will come along with a blade on their whippersnipper, as in not the string, but a blade that's like a cutting wheel, and it cuts the foliage off. Now, obviously, when you do that, it's really important. If you do that going into summer, you know, they're not going to respond so well. But if you do it when the ground is wet, they should come back. So if you can't do it, you know, obviously secateurs would be hard work. You might get your hedge trimmers to, like, a good pair of sharp hedge trimmers might work on it. But otherwise, I'd be trying a blade on your whippersnipper to try and take it off. And what you might do, you've cut one right down to the ground. With another one, maybe cut half of it. And the idea behind that is that the half you've left with foliage on can photosynthesize and produce energy for the other half to come back, and see if that works better.
That's a good idea, yeah.
Bit of experimenting. It's not a bad idea, so no, that's good. Yeah, you're dead right what you're saying there, Sophie, about when to do it. That is most important. So in the middle of summer like now, it's going to be hard to recover, so I'd be very wary of that. Wait till that rain comes, and that might change things drastically.
Thank you very much for the call, Roger. Appreciate that. The phone line is 1-300-222-891. And if you haven't won anything from the ABC in the last month and you'd like to win yourself an ABC Gardening Australia magazine, we'll give one away by calling in on that number, and one away by text if you put your full name and postal address in on 0467-922-891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We've got a special edition today because in the studio we've got Jeff Reed, who is President of the Conservation of Our Threatened Species Group of the Australian Plants Society, answering your native garden questions. And just a few texts on the issue of vergers have come in that I'd like to put to both of you. Sharon at Ross Trevor says, this is about grevilleas flowering, says, I sprinkle sulphur around the base of the plant and they kept flowering after that.
Mm-hmm. So that's helping to make the soil more acidic and less alkaline and counteract the alkalinity. So good on you.
Just on vergers, this person says some vergers have been planted by residents and look a mess and detract from the whole neighbourhood streetscape. Well, I guess that's a matter of taste, isn't it, how things look? This texter says, in older areas, lawn on vergers is valued and appreciated for its green perspective. The only thing I'd say about that is that the green grass ones in my area are all dust at the moment. So once you anchor it with some plants, it can be much more self-sustaining. Holdfast Bay Council have a list of local verge species for residents. We've planted our verge using this list, says this texter. And this other texter says City of Mitcham have to be asked if planting on verges as they only allow certain types of plants. So if you're planting on your nature strips, then please do go to your council. It's a great place to start because not only will they tell you what the rules and regulations around it are, they've probably got a good suggestion
selection of plants.
Of the selection to plant. Exactly. So great idea there. Let's go to the beautiful Barossa again, which I absolutely adore. Richard, you've got a gum that's not flowering. Good morning. What sort of gum is it?
It's a grafted flowering gum, Corymbia ficifolia.
Yes.
It's been in about 5 years. It's got three flowers in about the third year, but it's not flowered since. I've tried dosing it with a specialised native fertiliser. That's all I've tried at this stage. What am I doing wrong?
I'm not too sure about that. That's another one that'd be a bit interesting. I would be suggesting that you probably... Well, for things that need to flower, I'm just not so sure whether you could really change anything. If it's not going to flower, I'm not too sure there. Sophie, would you do anything to it to try and...
Can you tell me, Richard, because I hate to say that I planted some ficifolias at my previous place and they died because they didn't like my salty water that they got some of. Is the foliage of your grafted gum looking fantastic? Is it nice and green or is it a bit chlorotic, meaning it's, you know, yellow and green, blotchy?
A little bit yellow.
Yeah, okay. So because ficifolia is a Western Australian native species and they prefer a more acid soil. So if your soil is a bit on the alkaline side or... There's something else that's happened there. It, you know, until it's really healthy, it's not going to want to flower particularly well. So I know they are sold a lot. Those grafted gums are gorgeous and they're not cheap, but it mightn't be the best flowering gum for your area, and that's where, you know, obviously choosing local native species always helps. But I would... suggest that maybe it needs a bit of iron chelate. Several people have talked about that today. Someone else has talked about agricultural sulfur. That helps to acidify the soil. I'd be looking at the pH and making sure that you get those leaves back healthy and green and see if it responds then.
I tried the fertiliser thinking it might do that, but it doesn't seem to have had that effect.
Have you had a check to see what that pH is? You know, for
no, I haven't. No.
Because... Is there such a thing as a pH kit, Sophie? That
there certainly is.
Yes,
the thing with those pH test kits is that they only work on your natural soil. As soon as you've amended your soil with compost or something like that, the lignin in the organic matter, it stops it reading correctly. But you might even go to, you know, the Barossa Bush Gardens and ask them, because they're native plant specialists, say, I tried this and it hasn't worked. And they might say, oh, look, you know, I don't know if they do well in the Barossa or not. I know where the grafted gums do beautifully is in the Adelaide Hills. The ficifolias do beautifully in the Adelaide Hills. But, see, the Adelaide Hills has more acid soil. So it may just be related to the pH of your soil. Worth investigating, Richard. Yeah.
Thank you very much for the call, Richard. That is great. And congratulations to our magazine winners today. Veronica in Brighton and Tali in Para Hills have won those. So congratulations to you. Chris from Eden Hills is on the line. Re-native orchids. Hi, Chris.
Oh, good morning. Good to speak to you. Yes, I have two pots of Sydney rock orchids given to me by a dear friend, initially in one pot, but I divided them using orchid potting mix a few years ago. But they're looking very yellow and the leaves are a bit spotty and they flowered last year but not very well.
One person that would be very, or people that would be very good are the Native Orchid Society. I would be suggesting, again, if you could get there at our plant sale next Saturday, that the Native Orchid Society will be there and they could give you some really good advice.
Because dendrobiums are spectacular when they flower, but they are quite specialised.
Oh, right.
So good luck with that, Chris.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. And I have to say that Gail on the text line also said, is there a great place to buy a native South Australian orchids? That is the best place to start, I think, definitely. Our final call this morning is Narita from Victor Harbour. Good morning to you.
Yes, good morning. I'm in the process of trying to convert.
I'm sorry, Narita, we can't hear you. We're going to have to try for a better line there. So, look, while we are waiting for that better line, I'm just going to run through a few things. The plant sale is on next week, as we've been talking about, the autumn plant sale for the Australian Plant Society at the Erbray Agricultural High School, Fullerton Road in Netherby. It's from 9:30 to 1:30. You've got your own Jeff Reed propagation workshop starting today. But for people to find out more, what's the easiest way for them to do so online?
Online, cootsgroup@gmail.com. And that's the easiest way of getting hold of me.
Okay, now lots of people asking for lists of original native plants by area, including Mary and many others, asking what grows in York Peninsula, what grows in the Eyre Peninsula, etc. And we've already mentioned, start with your council.
Start with the council.
They've often got really good resources and often got their own booklets.
Can I also mention, if you go to the Landscapes website, so Landscapes is basically Department of the Environment, and there's different landscapes groups, Hills and Flurio, Eyre Peninsula, York Peninsula, you know, all these different groups. If you go on there, they've got amazing resources about the native vegetation of your area.
Right. And look, this texter says there is a great book called Plants of the Adelaide Plains and Hills by Gilbert Dashhorst and John Jessop. Thank you very much, whoever sent that through, and says most public libraries have this amazing resource. But, Jeff, there's a particular book you'd like to bring to everybody's attention.
Well, one of the people that's going to be at our plant sale is Neville Bonney, and he has just completed a book called One From One Small Seed, which is what I've got in my hand here, you can see. Probably 700-odd pages of it, and I have a special interest in that for the fact that I helped write that book at the same time. But he's going to be there at the plant sale, and he will actually sell you these books if you are interested. They're a little bit expensive, $115, I think it was, dollars. But he'll be there to talk about it and all the information that's in that book, which to me, I think is one of the most marvellous books I've ever seen.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah. And Neville's written so many books, whether they're on wild peaches or kwandongs or all sorts of things. So if you're ever in the outback and you go look for a book on the local vegetation, chances are Neville wrote it.
Neville has written it, yeah.
Look, before we let you go, we could not establish a better phone line, unfortunately, for Narita, but her question was, she can't get her boronias to stay alive. Is there any particular soil that a boronia prefers?
Baronias, they are as touchy as any plant can be. To me, I would be putting them into a container of some form and getting really good quality potting mix for those. There are several baronias that we just can't grow here in South Australia, but those ones that you're talking about, like Megatisma or whatever, Megastigma, beautiful plants and beautiful, you know, the fume. The smell is absolutely wonderful of them, but they can be very, very difficult to grow.
So they need sandy acid soil. So in South Australia where we have acid soil, it tends to be heavy clay. Where we have sandy soil, it tends to be alkaline. So that's why growing them in a pot and getting a native plant fertiliser and then keeping it on the acid side, ideally water with rainwater, is your best bet.
Absolutely.
And looks, just a couple of texts before we say goodbye to our talkback gardeners this morning. Someone raising the issue, of course, custodians of our country have incredible knowledge of our native plants. I hope that's something you're tapping into, Jeff.
Yes, we are.
Definitely. Dave has said the Hakeas and Eremophila longifolia are tough Aussie trees and has sent through a beautiful photograph of one there. And thank you for this texter who sent through a lovely picture of their verge garden. garden as well. So just remember, do talk to your local council first before you do anything else to find out the rules. And look, I know it's not actually plants, but Veronica in the Barossa has sent through Happy Mother's Day greetings to everybody. And she has sent through this amazing picture of cupcakes, which are all flowers in the most absolutely beautiful icing I've ever seen. Veronica, they are stunning. Thank you very much for your wishes. And Happy Mother's Day to you tomorrow, Sophie Thompson. Jeff Reed, thanks for coming in. Lovely to have you here. Yeah. And we'll get you back in again. Sophie, have you got much planned for tomorrow?
I actually hope to be in the garden. What better treat for me as a mum to be in my own garden with some of my tribe around me. So happy gardening to all mums, and enjoy this beautiful autumn weather.